Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, the UK broadcasters of the Australian Open, from where Catherine and I talk to you inside the players' area, outside the players' restaurant, with Mark Woodford, multiple Grand Slam champion, just walking past, having done his day's work. He's commentated on the tennis. And Catherine, this is an extraordinary place to be broadcasting and podcasting the Tennis Podcast, isn't it? After Roger Federer has just defeated Thomas Burdick. And I'm going to keep my voice down a little just as I say that, because Thomas's wife, Esther, is just about 20 feet away from us at the moment. And I mean, we'll get on to the match itself in a moment or two, but just a little anecdote, which just gives you an idea of the sort of frame of mind that I think Federer is in and is usually in. We just saw an amazing interview, I thought, one of his best interviews on court with Jim Courier.
Certainly now. One of his longest.
It was a long one. I think Courier, incidentally, has been superb this fortnight. I really do. I think sometimes he's overdone it in the interviews in the past, but I think that this week he's got the tone just right in the interviews, and he's got a lot from these players. They've been at ease, and Federer today talking about the Flinders Station design on the shoe, which he has on there. He says because he thinks storytelling in sport is important, and you're not allowed to have trophies on a shoe, apparently, it turns out. That's what he said. So,
who sets a rule that you're not allowed an image of a trophy on your shoe?
Well, I don't know who sets the rule, do I? But anyway,
that's what he said. Definitely not true. I mean, who is out there legislating for what you can have on your shoes? What a load of codswallop.
Catherine calls Roger Federer codswallop. Here on the Tennis Podcast. Great work.
I can only assume he's misunderstood the rules.
I
know they do love rules here in Australia. They really do. But who's got the authority to legislate for what graphics you have on your shoe? This is preposterous. This is a preposterous way to start this tennis podcast.
Well, I'm enjoying it. Anyway, he went on to also say that he tried on, in the early stages of their careers, he'd tried on Nadal's Capri pants, those trousers that he used to wear, which was also a little bit of a shocker.
In private, I presume.
But probably. It reminds me, we've just seen John McEnroe walk past because he's just gone on to have his exhibition match in the evening session here. I remember when he told me that that he wore Bjorn Borg underwear, the official branded Bjorn Borg underwear.
Yeah, I've been witness to that myself.
Those were the days.
I probably should clarify that comment. I've witnessed them being washed.
Right, okay. Probably best
in a sink backstage at a Champions Tour event in Luxembourg.
Right, I see. Thanks for the info. And anyway, just to complete my quite long-winded anecdote here. So while I was waiting for you to come and join me here for the Tennis Podcast recording, out of the locker room, which is just about 20 feet to my right at the moment, came Roger Federer. And he walked past me, and he walked past Thomas Burdick's.
He didn't stop to chat.
No, he didn't stop to chat, no.
He doesn't.
Maybe I'm in the bad box. Maybe
David,
I'm in the relevance.
David Law chats lead to Australian Open titles.
Well, that's
this
true.
We know.
He hasn't thought that through, has he?
No.
But anyway, he walked past and he sort of was on his way to the press conference, and over his right shoulder he suddenly realised he'd just walked straight past Thomas Burdick's wife, Esther. And he stopped still. And he went back and he said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Can I just say hello quickly?" And they said hello. And he said, "Sorry, by the way." And she said, "Oh, it's all right." And then she said to her friend, "Oh, he's so polite, isn't he?" Wasn't that nice? So, there we have it.
She said, "Oh, it's okay, though." Shouldn't she say, "No, it's blooming well not okay"?
Well, would you? No, you'd be polite, wouldn't you? That's just the way it works. So, the match itself started with Federer. In his words, feeling antsy and frustrated at the way things were going on the court. And he went 5-2 down. He was two set points down. And Thomas Burdick was playing incredibly well, wasn't he? He really was playing superbly.
He was playing brilliantly. The problem is, he knew as soon as he lost that first set that the challenge was over. He is capable of playing brilliantly, but for a man of his experience, he played the trajectory of that match, the narrative of that match, was that of a sort of young player that mentally can sort of challenge for that first set, and then if they lose it in a narrow, heartbreaking fashion, they sort of can't quite recover from the disappointment and can't recapture their form and belief of the first set. And Thomas Burdick's 32, and he's been in a Grand Slam final, and he's been in you definitely can count them, but I don't happen to have the stat to hand. But he's been in this situation many times before, and unfortunately he just has this is a very precarious place to be recording this podcast, David, because his nearest and dearest are over my shoulder. How low can I talk and it still be audible to our listeners?
Exceptional job.
He's just got a... When he went off at that injury timeout at the end of the second set, I don't know exactly what that was for, because he received the timeout off court, and I'm not for a moment questioning that there was not an injury going on, but my brother sent me a text saying Thomas Burdick's suffering from a chronic case of not being as good as Roger Federer here. Well, and that is the bottom line, and he goes on the court thinking that. And it's an inferiority complex, and it's an understandable one, because fundamentally he's an inferior tennis player, and he's been hamstrung by his talent, I suppose, and by beating Roger Federer in 2004 in Athens at the Olympics, and that was the way he announced himself onto the tennis scene, wasn't it? And he's very, very good, but he's limited.
Yeah, and it shows how well he did to win 5 out of 8 matches in that period between 2010 and 2013. He was fantastic in that
period.
He
was back when he was fearless, though. Mm. There's fear in his eyes now.
And a sort of mental scar tissue does build, doesn't it? And,
absolutely.
And I do feel that we've talked and followed, obviously, Grigor Dimitrov's career throughout, and that has built. I think they've done an exceptional job of sort of scraping it away.
Yeah, reversing the damage. Yeah.
But at the same time, if you get too many tough losses, and it can be hard, and that actually, I think, is one of the great achievements of Federer in this era, is that he has reversed that rivalry with Nadal, and you have to probably give huge credit, I think, to Ivan Ljubicic in that regard, and other coaches, Stefan Edberg as well. But mostly, this, whatever they've done to get to this point where they've turned that rivalry around, because Nadal's not a worse player.
No.
He's found the key, and I think that's actually one of the exceptional things about Federer, is that he's never given in to repeated defeats mentally. He's always seems to have been able to reset and go on the court thinking, new day, I'm going to win. Pretty cool.
Yeah, Roger Federer, pretty cool. That could be the headline. And just news on Nadal before we talk about the women's quarterfinals that we've seen today. News on Nadal is that about a 3-week recovery period for the injury. It's not actually a hip injury, is it? It's sort of a very high up place in his leg.
Yeah.
Not the official medical term.
First degree injury some description, but I couldn't remember these.
I'm surprised that any first degree injury can heal in 3 weeks, but these people
probably,
are superhuman,
aren't
they?
It's probably a little tear, and it's probably one of those that if you carried on playing at that sort of level, you're just expanding that tear and it's getting worse, you know? So, as we said last night, what is it? Two retirements in 264 matches, you know, at Grand Slams, you really can understand that, that, especially when a match is poised at two sets all. I mean, I spoke to Marin Cilic afterwards for Five Live, and he, you know, I think he was absolutely overjoyed to win, but he would love to have carried on because he was playing so well. He really was playing well last night. And Nadal, yeah, I think he's absolutely gutted. It really is. That was another thing Federer said straight after the match today, is that he the last thing he did before going to bed last night was text Rafael Nadal.
I didn't hear him say that. That's a great line.
Just said, you know, well, he's a rival and a friend and somebody that... It's hard, in his words, hard to see somebody go through that, you know. I think that's genuine. I really do.
He was clearly in a bad place last night, Nadal, wasn't he? I think we recorded before he came to his press conference, but by all accounts, that was a pretty sombre affair. That, of course, was before he had the scan, which revealed, although it's bad news in the immediate term, nothing serious, which is very welcome news. But yeah, he took a few moments with his head bowed before taking questions in that press conference, which is a tough one to watch.
It was a tough one. We have had today a succession of very different types of match to what I think we would have expected early on.
Immensely different. I mean, I could not have bigged up the two women's semi-finals more on Eurosport and on the Tennis Podcast. I was genuinely feverish with excitement about. I had to find something to be excited about in lieu of any animals being laid upon me today. And they were very disappointing, weren't they, in terms of competition? They were extremely disappointing. I mean, goodness me, Angelique Kerber, to crush Madison Keys in the way she did, and in a slightly different way, goodness me, Simona Halep, because she was very nearly 4-love down, and what, she lost 2 games after that?
Yeah, well, she won, I think, 8 games in a row from love 3 break point down. And, I mean, part of me's a little disappointed in both Pliskova and Keys, because as well as those other two players were playing, that points to big hitting players who just were a little reckless and erratic and weren't hitting the mark and you know, maybe needed to dial it in, quite honestly. That's the problem with those sort of games is you know, there's so little margin for error with it. It's absolutely thrilling when it comes off, but you know, they've got beaten so heavily that I wonder whether maybe they should have been adjusting things rather.
Yeah, I mean, I think different stories in both, because Pliskova just seemed completely shell-shocked by the end of the first set. She seemed to look a bit like, goodness me, I was nearly 4-love and here I am in a terrible position. And you know, you're right that these are not players with troubleshooting in their arsenal. You know, there are probably similarities with Thomas Burdick there. You know, they've got a game. It's very,
younger,
very
though,
good.
So they at least have less of that scar tissue to which we refer, and I suspect, well, you would hope, would be able to bounce back for future instalments.
Would hope. I do worry a little bit for Madison Keys, though, because she seems not... She is still young, and I'm not desperately worried, but she seems sensitive, and she's had a couple of experiences now, the US Open final and here today, where she's not done it in any way on the big stage. She's crumbled a bit, really. She's just not been able to produce anything like what she's produced to get her to that point. And I think Lindsay Davenport is the person to be able to help her through that. I think that's a magnificent relationship. But, yeah, I do worry a little bit, but as I say, because she seems to be a sensitive character, and and we've seen so many examples of how it builds up.
Yeah, yeah, we have. That having been said, crikey, we're in for a... I know it's easy to tempt fate, and we've said this about those prospective clashes in the quarterfinals, but if Simona Halep against Angelique Kerber isn't an absolute classic, I'm really devastated.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I don't think you're alone.
As our good friend Gigi Salmon walks by, and she's off out of the commentary box and heading home.
Yeah, I mean, I will ask for some sort of refund from Australia. If Angelique Kerber, a refund from tennis, if Angelique Kerber against Simona Halep isn't a cracker. I mean, Halep said she was preparing herself for another 3 hours and 44 minutes, which is really good to hear. Her attitude, incidentally, talking about someone who's reversing or trying to reverse the effects of scar tissue, she seems to be doing it to me. I know it's very easy to talk the talk about going out there and trying to have fun and not worrying too much about whether balls are going in or out and whether you're going to win or lose. Just go out there, try to have fun and do what you do best. But I'm sort of believing it from her now. I am believing that there has been a bit of a shift in her mentality, and she is... Yeah, reversing the damage of experiences past a little bit. And we've talked about it before. I think being world number one might have a little bit to do with that.
Yeah.
She could lose it this tournament. She very well could. I think Caroline Wozniacki is in with a decent shout of taking it from her. But, yeah, goodness me, that had better be the match that we all want it to be. Or I'll be getting my crocodile out and I'll be taking aim.
Yes, if you're not sure what she's referring to, go on our Instagram page, because Catherine with crocodiles is a thing. She's also put up the video of when she met the... Was it a python or a boa constrictor?
It was Ollie, the olive python.
Some massive snake, anyway.
He does... He kills his prey slowly constricting himself around them and suffocating them.
Right.
And as this snake was tying itself in an ever tighter knot around me, I was gently informed by the handler that they've never been known to kill humans. But they do sometimes kill crocodiles and eat those.
Right.
So,
okay.
Comforting news.
Yes, well, thankfully, safe and sound. Post-event.
Post-Ollie the Olive Python.
Yes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The other match that we had today, sandwiched in between those two women's quarterfinals, was between Chung Kyun Tennis Sandgren. First and foremost, a straight sets win for Chung, who just isn't losing his way at all. I mean, he is just grasping this opportunity and playing with such verve and confidence and spirit and skill. I mean, what a player we've got on our hands here.
Yeah, in the words of Rob Curling in the Eurosport studio, Sandgren might have lost, but tennis was the winner today.
There you go. Always rely on Rob. Good work, Rob.
And he's right, because Chung Hyun is great news for tennis. I love his attitude. I can't get enough of his post-match press conferences and interviews, and you're right about Jim Courier. One of the things he's got really right this week is getting Chung to speak Korean, and he actually takes the mic from him, doesn't he? And I like that, you know, there's a real composure in that moment. And I am not saying he's going to go out there and beat Roger Federer, but I think he's going to give him his biggest test so far, which is, you know, the non-prediction of all non-predictions, because Federer hasn't lost a set
so far. And yet, even despite that, it doesn't feel like he's at his absolute best at the moment.
No.
To me.
Absolutely not. And they've never played before, which is going to be interesting. Chung is, he's in that career sweet spot of just knowing that he's playing the best tennis of his life. There's probably almost certainly better to come, but up until this point, best tennis of his life, and he's completely fearless.
Yeah, nobody expects him to win. Nobody's going to give him a hard time if he doesn't win. And he's also Djokovic-like in terms of the way he plays the sport. I mean, you're not going to be able to hit a stroke, get him off balance, and automatically win a point. This is one of those guys that rewrites the rules of radio commentary that I've talked about with Nadal and Murray and Djokovic, because you feel like you're coming to the end of a point and you're about to crescendo with the final shot, and oh no, suddenly Speedy Gonzalez out there has just suddenly got another ball back and you're back into a baseline rally again. That's what this guy plays like, and he can also hurt because his game is big. His ground strokes are spiteful.
Look at the
rivalry between Djokovic and Federer in the last 5 years. It has been dominated by Novak Djokovic. So if Chung can bring that kind of tennis out against Federer, we could have a real match on our hands. Real match.
We could, yeah. And we both spoke to Thomas Johansson earlier today, of course, the champion here back in 2002, very much a surprise champion. I know they've had a few of them down the years, surprise champions here, but for me, he was, you know, the biggest out of nowhere champion. The year that Tim Henman was the top seed left in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those were days.
That's how us Brits remember it. And talked to him mostly about Kyle Edmund, because he's been hitting with Kyle for the past few days. You chatted him for BBC Radio as well. But the last question I asked him was about being the underdog at Slams and being somebody that nobody expected even to get to this point, let alone get any further. And I said, you know, are you the perfect person to tell Kyle that it's worth believing, because the unexpected can and does happen? You know, I am living proof of it. And, you know, obviously that applies to Chung and to Edmund in these instances. And he told this lovely little anecdote about how Stefan Edberg and Mats Wilander came to speak to him on the morning of his final against Marat Safin back in 2002. And again, it sounds trite and like something you hear all the time, but he said, they just told me to enjoy it. That was the only message they were trying to hammer home to me. And he said he tried to put it into action that day, and obviously that worked marvellously. But he said how much he's thought about it since then, and how much sense it makes to him, makes more sense to him with every passing day. And he said he was going to do his very best to impart that to Kyle tomorrow or today or whenever they'll next be seeing one another. But
yeah, because he's been hitting with him a couple of times this week.
I think the past 3 days they've been hitting together because of the Freddie Rosengren connection. He is not from the thing is that the name of this town in Sweden which has the rubbish forehands is it's spelt in a way that doesn't make sense to
V-A-X-J-O.
Yeah,
I think it's Växjö.
Matt says it's differently when he's saying it to an English person than when he's saying it to a Swedish person.
Right.
But anyway, Växjö is the rubbish forehand centre of
Part
Sweden,
of the universe.
And the brilliant everything else centre of Sweden.
And now it's got a tie to a brilliant forehand.
Yeah. Incidentally, just another little footnote. This is probably a whole debate topic that we don't really have time to get into now. But Ben Rothenberg of other podcast Parishes tweeted earlier today a picture of he obviously, just out of interest, went online to see if tickets were still available for the two men's semi-final session, the first of which is Thursday night, Edmund against Cilic, and the second of which is Friday night, which we now know is Chung versus Federer, but at the time it was Chung versus another, Federer or Burdick. And even before Federer was confirmed to be in that match, and bear in mind a lot of people thought Burdick had a chance tonight, tickets for the Friday night session were five times the price of the Thursday night session.
Was that on an exchange? That wasn't on the official website.
No, it was on a ticket exchange, right, which is purely supply
market,
and demand.
It?
Yeah, it's pure supply and demand driven economics. Now, look, you know, we don't need to explain. Everyone knows the ridiculous value of Roger Federer to this sport, but is that a bit of a worry that there's that level of added, you know, that the world, the tennis world, values him above any other five times as much?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we
values the mere possibility of him.
I think it's, you know, you're talking about a freakish situation with Roger Federer. Something that Chris Clary, Ben's colleague at the New York Times, tweeted tonight was, when was the last time you can remember an underdog getting the crowd support against Roger Federer? And I mean, I was scratching my head and I was trying to think of an example. And I mean, somebody said maybe Francis Tiafoe, US Open, for a while.
Even then, for a while.
Until it looked like Federer might lose.
Isn't it? There are spells when the underdogs get support, but you feel it's only because the crowd sort of want a bit of a match and want their period of Federer joy to be extended a little.
So I don't think it's necessarily representative, is my conclusion to that. Yes, it is a worry in a way, but look, once he's not there, the sport and the fans, they have to turn to somebody else. It's just the way it is.
It'll naturally recalibrate.
It will happen.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, look,
it's interesting, isn't
it? It is interesting, and it just took me aback that it was that big a difference at a stage where nobody even, you know, you'd be gambling on paying that amount of money on the possibility of Roger Federer playing. But hey, if I had a ticket for Edmund against Cilic, I'd be feeling pretty happy, because
I think it's going to be a good match.
Yeah,
it'd be surprising to me if they didn't come out and play well. They're playing in so well, and they've got such a sort of meat and potatoes type of game. They know what they're doing. They bang a serve down. They attack, and they've both got decent defences too, to just kind of absorb power. So I think it could be a really spectacular match.
It's interesting, you know, Eurosport have been, we've been told we can have a few questions with Kyle off the practice court tomorrow, and we were a bit taken aback by the time he's chosen to hit. He's practicing 9 till 10, I think, tomorrow is when he was booked in, and I was just on air with Pat Cash a few minutes ago, and I explained that to him, and he, sharp intake of breath, and he said, I hope he's planning to have a nap.
Yeah, I would have thought he is.
Is he a napper, though?
I would have thought that's the plan.
I hope so, because he's not played. What I guess is, because he has been practicing early throughout the fortnight, I guess is he wants to keep the same routine, but of course he's not played a proper night session match this fortnight, so I'm just relaying.
Well, you can always give him a couple of tips.
I will pass on the importance and the joy of naps
and a few
to him tomorrow, and will then take full credit if he ends up winning.
So
it's because of the naps.
So that match is going to be live on Eurosport tomorrow. It's 7:30 local time, so that's 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
in the UK.
Build up starts 8 a.m. We're going to have John McEnroe on commentary. Might even have him with me in the build-up, or if not McEnroe, we'll have Mats Wilander. I mean, we are pulling out the stops, David, as I'm
Excellent.
Sure BBC Radio are as well.
Yep.
I mean,
well, they've got me.
In terms of viewership, this is, you know, orders of magnitude beyond anything else.
The entire breakfast show is off the air on BBC Five Live so that we can commentate on this. We've got Pat Cash with us.
Stu's stealing Pat Cash.
Well, you know, share him about. You know, share the joy.
You're tart, Pat.
That's all tomorrow. That's coming up. We've got it's the two women's semi-finalists on which day?
Tomorrow.
tomorrow.
They're through the night tomorrow, so 3 a.m. UK time. 3 a.m.
Wow.
Partridge impression.
So 2 p.m.
local time. I don't actually know which way around they are. I presume it's Mertens against Wozniacki first.
It surely would be.
And then Halep against Kerber, followed by me angrily demanding a refund from the tennis gods if it's not a four-hour-long three-setter. We should probably mention Mertens Wozniacki as the last point of order.
Yeah, there's two more things. One, I think, is Tennis Sangren addressed his Twitter situation. In fact, he's deleted everything he's ever done on Twitter now. He read out a long statement that you'll be able to find on social media if you'd like, addressing all this. Effectively, he was hitting out at the media for sensationalising and going with whatever narrative that they have deemed that they want to, and refused to take any questions, which is rather a different situation than he was in a couple of days ago, when he seemed quite happy to talk about the situation of what he tweeted. But a pretty unsatisfactory and unpleasant situation all round.
Unsatisfactory. It's very difficult to sort of report or comment on it without his take on it. You're sort of reading into his actions. You're drawing conclusions on the basis of his actions, which is what he seems to have been angry about us doing up until now. But he's now giving us no option to quote him on it, and it's all really unsatisfying. I found his statement thoroughly bizarre, I have to say. And I think most people would. It was really sort of angry and accusatory. And then there's this paragraph at the end where he says, "But I only have to answer to Christ, so to hell with all of you," kind of. So it was a bizarre episode in the day, which I think will sort of sink without trace quite quickly, because there's no way to move the story on.
Caroline Wozniacki, as a final thought, is in. I saw her match against Carla Suarez Navarro after we'd finished last night, and she was pushed. She was really pushed, but crikey, she's hard as nails. She is so tough to beat.
She is, and I do think there's a little pattern emerging here of players. Well, I suppose there's only two of them left in, but players who have been hardened by coming back from match points down early in the tournament. You've got Halep and Wozniacki that have both done that, and there's every chance they could end up meeting in the final, and you'd be guaranteed another champion that's come from match point down early in tournament, which I love. But not that they weren't hardened coming into it, but those experiences have hardened them further, I think, and made them feel invincible. So I do expect Wozniacki to come through that, but then no one expected Mertens to get this far, so you never know.
No, well, you're absolutely right.
You stayed on it just long enough, David.
Yes, so we are the Tennis Podcast, and we are standing in the player area as Roger Federer has just finished his half an hour's worth of media commitments. He is done for the night. Good night, Roger. And he is off to go and sleep up, and he is going to relax and rest up for whatever match is next.
I don't know that. He might be going out clubbing.
Well, he did talk about that with Jim Courier briefly, didn't he, a few nights ago?
About going out clubbing?
Yeah, dancing. But, it was more of a joke, I think. Anyway, so we've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with Eurosport. We are executive produced by Melanie Bowes, by TennisBalls.com, by Triple S. We are sponsored by the La Manga Club, the fantastic holiday destination in Spain where Catherine learned her forehand, and incidentally Jill Craibas has just given me a date in which I can get trained up for our rematch, and I can't wait. That's happening this week. Catherine is looking nonplussed with that, but she's just going to have to deal with it. We'll be back with more tennis podcasts in the next few days. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.